Sie hören eine Veranstaltung der Leipziger Buchmesse. Für die Inhalte ist die Leipziger Buchmesse nicht verantwortlich. Viel Spaß beim Hören.
Ich hoffe, Sie verstehen, dass alle auf Englisch führen, denn unser Georgisch ist relativ rudimentär und Aka Mochilatze lebt in London, er spricht natürlich fließend Englisch und wir fanden, dass das Unterbrechen dann immer in das Deutsche etwas anstrengend ist. Beim Gesprächsverlauf, Sie werden das verstehen, dass man dann immer so seltsame Pausen hat und wir werden das auf Englisch führen, aber Sie werden das sicher verfolgen können. Ja, ich lehne mich jetzt entspannt zurück und folge dem Gespräch und freue mich sehr, dass Sie trotz des Schneesturms schon hier sind.
Vielen Dank. So, please give a very warm welcome to Aka.
And, thank you. That's fine.
I have to say, though, I would like to start with a tough question before we get to the funny stuff. Okay?
Okay.
I heard that you have been living in London for a while now. For how many years?
About 10, 8, yeah. Something like that.
So, do you feel like you're in exile?
No.
No.
Absolutely.
It is just a free choice.
Yes, yes. It's 21st century. Many Georgians live abroad now, more than a million, as I know, and we are a small nation. And you always read and hear and listen about nostalgia because they really hard work there and abroad and many illegal immigrants and so on. So they all have this nostalgia. But I couldn't feel that because in our time, if you have a ticket, you're at home in the evening, and so that's it. And also, this digital world and Wi-Fi gives you a feeling of being home every moment. So,
okay. But Santa Esperanza, which is, I think, an archipelago, you might say, of islands in the Black Sea, where this novel is set. Santa Esperanza, would you say that is an exile for people?
For some people, maybe. Yes. But it's like such a false heaven for many people. But it's a culture itself, different culture and subculture, and it's created. That's why people love it. It's a bit romantic, that the usual world, and that's it. It's multicultural and so.
Did you say a false heaven?
Yes. Because, as we know, there is no heaven on there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So that's interesting. I thought of Santa Esperanza, which is somewhere between reality and fiction, as a sort of makeshift paradise. But a false heaven, it sounds a little bit more negative, I think. Yeah.
It's not negative. It's not negative, I think. Yeah. It's just false. It's illusion. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's more soft word.
Yeah.
Illusional. Okay. Paradise.
So let's maybe...
Like you guessed this, all this Mediterranean thing and the resorts, and you always... People from north, they always feel they are like a lot of sun and so on. The same with this island. You know, it's multicultural. People speak five languages there. Everybody, that's good, but then it changes in one day, and you'll never bring it back.
Yeah, let's maybe talk about where exactly it is situated. It's in the Black Sea, and from parts of the novel, you can gather that you can travel there by airplane.
Yes, and yes. It's as I guess it's southeast of Black Sea. More closer to Georgia and Turkey than to Russia, something like that.
And you do claim that you yourself have been to Santa Esperanza once.
You know, I've been writing a lot in my life and creating some different worlds and even in real cities and bit different than it in reality. The same with that. When I decided to write, I had just an idea of bit different country, bit different from Georgia. What if something like alternate history of Georgia, but not directly Georgia? Mm-hmm. Island, you know about islands. I lived a lot on island countries, and I know it different, totally different from continental. So there is something always not like usual on the islands. There is sea around, and
yeah,
you can't run.
Yeah,
so endlessly deep to the woods, the wood ends. That's like that.
One thing that is very unusual about these islands is that you already said it. It's a cultural melting pot, and there are basically three big streams of people coming in. It's the Joanites, as you call them.
Yes.
It's a sort of Georgians, I might say.
Yes. Yeah?
And then there's the Italian businessmen, or you might say Genovese.
Genovese. Genovian. You know, these Genovians had these cities on the Black Sea shores during the centuries, and then they were thrown by Ottomans from there. But they were north, and I have like that they moved more south. They found the islands and occupied them. But there were still these marine Georgians who lived there. And also, of course, Ottomans, Turkish people who also occupied the island. You know, when countries like that had a long, deep, and complicated histories and many cultures, as usual. And at the end, there are Englishmen there, and they rule like Englishmen rule, as usual. So.
Yes, so there are the Joanites, they are Orthodox Christians.
Yes.
Then the Italian descendants, they are Catholic Christians. Mm-hmm. And then there are also...
There are Muslims, and they are Englishmen.
Yeah, yes.
Yes.
And it's also a bit of a farce of colonial history. Maybe we can talk about the English influence in the book a little bit.
Yes.
Because there are people who have been... there's one guy who is a travel journalist. Maybe you can talk about him a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it's a popular genre, travel books. Yeah. Guy travels there. It's English. It's, you know, somehow it's a Hong Kong story. Englishmen ruled there for a century, and one day they leave. And all that multicultural, quiet world is destroyed in one evening, as clans had their own interests. And that's that. There is no army on the island. There is nothing, but people have weapons at home, and they decide to fight. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The way I see it, though, how the Englishmen are depicted in this novel, it's very parodic, and... for instance, there's a guy who is from Scotland, and he's a bit weird, and he has come to Santa Esperanza to find the origin of the culture, and he has a very strange theory about it. So would you say that you make fun of the English all of the time?
No, of course, but it's a colonial story. And in colonial story, you know, in colonies... elites are in a different position, and elites hate the rulers. Mm-hmm. In that occasion, these Georgians and Genovese hate Englishmen, but they still collaborate because their children studied in Oxford, they are well educated in boarding schools in England, and so on, but they ignore them. Like they are not only touches the rugby game in summer when tourist team plays the regiment. They call it regiment, the English force, which is touched there. They call it just regiment. So
maybe this is a good point in time to talk about the structure of the novel a bit, because this is a novel of multiple single novels inside, or novellettes, you might say.
Yeah.
And it has the structure of a card game.
Yes.
And it has 36 cards, in a way.
Yes.
And can you say something about that, maybe?
The idea came from this card deck, which has no starting point and no end. You know, you can reshuffle it any time you want. So I decided to write 36 notebooks. You can read in any direction. It never starts, never ends, and you still know the face of the characters. But it's not about like structured like modern novels, which are doing how we all know how they are done. You know, you need good first sentence and then carry on and go up and up. No, just in any direction, and a combination of cards, of suits, of colors make different stories, which are not tense, but you can understand and do it in read it in the independent way. First time when it was published, it was like notebooks. Just 36 notebooks, and you can pick it from the bag and just read any of them and can understand if you follow in any direction. That was the point. But I had no plot at the time when I had the idea. And then I decided it's a bit boring to do it on the continent and in the real country. So so it came. And
but I'm thinking, in literary history, we have had that sometimes. It made me think of Julio Cortázar and Rayuela in the 80s. But isn't it still that a book is, in a way, in the end, it's a linear thing. And it has some kind of linearity to it. But would you really think that people pick up this book and they
no,
go...
No, of course not. But I enjoyed that while working. And me are the first reader. The only reason I'm writing is enjoyment. I have no other serious reason to write. So so it's for me, first of all. Then if you like the idea, you can follow it. If not, the book is the most democratic thing. You are closing and put up the shelf and never take the so that's not the problem at all.
Yeah. So the single stories, they are independent, but they are also interrelated, I would say.
Yes.
A lot of characters, they pop up once and again.
Yes.
And there are also, what struck me as funny, there are multiple different persons of narrators. Some are the descendants of Georgian monks, I would say. So there's a lot of biblical or monkish tone to some of the narration, would you say?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. Georgia is Eastern Christianity with a very, very old history, and it's a part of culture. It's a deep culture. It's different in different regions and so on, but it's not a leading part there. But anyway, there are many storytellers, and one of them is usually be a part of that society. Mm-hmm. The story goes on. Yeah?
I would like to come to the question of sincerity versus funniness, because in this way of narration that I call biblical or maybe the sort of old sagas, a lot can happen between one sentence and another. So you have people born and dying in the next sentence, and you present a lot of history in one short paragraph sometimes. And that can strike the reader as funny, because you get accustomed to a character and in the next sentence he's already dead, right?
Yes, of course, because that's the way how the old history books are written in medieval times. You know, you read all these chronicles and it starts and in two sentences you have drama. Mm-hmm. And that's, I was speaking yesterday about the letter of Georgian nobleman in 9th century to king. In the first sentence he writes that, "My king, bothering you because of sadness I have in home, you took my sons to war. One of them was killed there, another one arrested, and the third one died of wounds at home. And now I need the permission to sell a couple of villages to make church service and to pay for release of my alive son." There's three sentences, and whole life is there. And it's so dramatic sometimes. So that's a style. Maybe in also in European, and especially in Persian chronicles, a Georgian style of telling the story at that time is that, in a very simple way, and it's drama if you follow that. In our postmodern and postmodern time, it looks funny in some way, because especially if you are doing it in the same language it was done, and that's 500 years ago, and also trying to mimic that language. So, so that's that.
Yeah, one of the episodes that exactly does what you just said. Is a funeral scene, and there is a crying widow, and then somebody falls in love with the crying widow at the funeral while it is happening, and then the next moment they run off together. So that's how quick things change in life sometimes.
Yes, of course, we know that it's life is 1 second. It's just one gulp, just one breath. Everything can change at every minute. We can't plan anything. That's my opinion on that. And, you know, funerals, I don't know here in the West, but in Georgia and the Eastern world, it's a very important thing. It's a deeply important thing. It's a social thing, in fact. And these women, I'm younger, but even in Tbilisi, my parents remember the paid mourners who came and... cry if you don't have the woman at home. Yes, of course.
Wow.
Yes, and not only in Georgia, everywhere in the East. It's a common thing. It was a common thing. Mm-hmm. So these mourners, these women, those are people which we call today, we have these problems with gender or something like that. A woman which can't speak out at home goes to the shore and mourns there. It sounds like a song as the waves come and she rhythms on it. You know that. So the monk is listening at night and falls in love. It's a song. It's kind of a blues. Yes. She cries about herself, but it's music. And then it turns into a subculture of closed clubs where these women with covered face come and moan. That's that story there, I guess, what they're talking about.
Thank you for bringing it up, because that would have been my sort of final question. It's very hard to make sense of this 800-page book in one sentence, but I think it is a book about singing and crying, mostly. Is that so?
Yes.
Singing and crying?
Yes. Maybe in some way. It's drama. Mm-hmm. It's drama. It's about 1 second which changes your life. Sweet, good, multicultural life into a civil war where everybody loves everybody but fights each other. Because there are some... It's an island and lands are too small and everybody needs to get a peace. That's about that.
So
of course, they are crying there.
People are so close in a way that they might even fall in love with their enemies, right?
Yes, so, yes, that's a common thing there. So that's...
I think it is not by coincidence that this has the shape of David Foster Wallace's endless... Unendlicher Spaß. Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah. Let's see. I don't know, quite frankly. I'm not a deep thinker. I just have some feelings and pass them to the book. Yeah. So,
right. I have one more strange question, and I thought it might upset you. But maybe if it upsets you, it's just my limited cultural knowledge. But some of the parts of the novel, it reminded me of Emir Kusturica and Black Cat, White Cat. But it's a completely different culture, I know, and it's maybe not your thing at all. But maybe just could you relate to it?
I'm not sure about that, quite frankly. Hmm. I'd rather say it to remind you Godfather, but Kusturica, no way. Kusturica once was a good filmmaker, so... Mm-hmm. And the film is older. It's like a lovely movie. Lovely movie. About nothing, of course. But anyway.
So, okay, we end with the Godfather. That's always a good ending.
Godfather,
right?
And Romeo and Juliet. You can mix with those things. Do the sorrow of life and love.
Godfather and Romeo and Juliet, that to me is the perfect blurb for the book.
Two dozens of other such... less known books.
Okay, thank you very much for this, and I will see you tonight at Café Bao Bao if anybody wants to come over tonight at 7 p.m., right?
Thank you. Yeah. I hope so.
Genau, vielen Dank. Heute Abend, 19 Uhr im Café Bao Bao, werden wir noch eine längere Lesung auch haben aus dem Buch. Eine Schauspielerin wird auf Deutsch lesen, wir werden auch ein bisschen Georgisch hören. Jan Wiele moderiert und fragt. Und wenn Sie in das Buch reinlesen wollen, können Sie eine kleine Leseprobe mitnehmen, hier um die Ecke auf dem Büchertisch. Und Sie können das Buch natürlich auch erwerben. Es sind ja 36 Kapitel, es ist ein Kartenspiel eigentlich mit 36 Karten. Es kostet 36 Euro. Und es ist mindestens das Zehnfache wert, denn Sie werden da nicht nur die Geschichte Georgiens, sondern mindestens 2 Wochen lachen können. Ja, ich
danke. Und weinen.
Und weinen und tanzen. Ich danke Ihnen sehr herzlich, dass Sie zu diesen frühen Morgenstunden schon hier waren. Vielen Dank, Akamochi Laze, dass Sie hier sind und noch auf der Messe weitere Termine wahrnehmen, heute auf dem Taz-Sofa. Danke, Jan Wiele, dass Sie so früh aufgestanden sind für uns. Und ja, ich wünsche Ihnen noch einen wunderbaren Messetag und ein schönes Wochenende.
Danke, thank you. Thank you.
Danke fürs Zuhören. Wir sehen uns auf der nächsten Leipziger Buchmesse.